Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
As long as Matt...
Sal Capaccio.
Sal!
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 Capaccio.
On WGR.
Good morning. Welcome to hour three here of Nate and Derek instead of Jeremy and Joe. We're filling in this week for both of which, and Joe's sick. We're hoping he feels better and is back tomorrow. But joining us now on the Wester Hotline is Sal Capaccio. And Sal, good morning to you, my friend. Good to talk and good to chat with you during the week. Usually we're Bills game day, so it's good to talk to you on a weekday.
Yeah, you too, guys. Thanks for pinch hitting here this morning, obviously.
Thanks for being available for us. We appreciate you, man.
It's Jeremy and Joe featuring Derek and Nate.
That's right. It's easy as that. Sal, I was joking a little earlier with Joe Marino. We were talking about last week's game and kind of talking about, you know, what this next week's game against the Lions could look like. I was kind of joking that I don't think that Sean McDermott and Bobby Babich are going to get a whole lot of sleep this week as they prepare for this matchup against the Lions offense that, you know, is one of the best in the league, coming off giving up 40 points. I can't imagine, you know, their beds are getting a whole lot of use this week.
No, if I remember right, I have to go back and listen, and I can ask Eric about it, but Bobby Babich was on Eric Wood's podcast in the summer, and he was asked by Eric, who's the toughest offensive coordinator / play caller to prepare for, and his answer was Ben Johnson. This was back in August.
Coming after Sean McVay, by the way, is not easy either. You know,
that's right. And I don't think there's obviously not even intending any disrespect to anybody else.
Sure,
you know, it's
of course
a great answer, because he just said, listen, he just puts you in so many binds. They do so many things so well, right? It's not one thing they do. And you look at what the Detroit Lions are doing right now offensively, and that's exactly, you know, what's going on. This is a team that is number one in the league in points per game. Number two is the Bills. They're the only two teams averaging over 30 points a game. The Lions are at 32.1 points per game. They are ranked basically in the top four in every major statistical category when it comes to yards per game, yards per play, third down. They're sixth in red zone. I mean, you just don't get them off the field and they score. It's as simple as that. And you're going to have to force some turnovers. You're going to have to get one or two stops. And then you're going to have to, you know, figure out on the offensive side what to, you know, to be aggressive and score points like last week. But, yeah, this is a really, really tough matchup against a really high-powered offense.
You know, we also talked a little bit, Sal, about, I guess, maybe the surprising nature of exactly how the Rams got after the Bills. Because, you know, I think if the, I mentioned, it's like if they ran for 220 against the Bills, people be like, you know what? Yeah, you know, sometimes you're going to lose a game like that. The Bills have lost games like that. The Colts a couple of years ago, the Saints a couple of years ago. It would have been less surprising. It was how they did it, Sal. The ease in which they were able to move the ball down the field through the air and really vertically without the, you know, double pass interference call, which is, I think, an incredibly rare call, by the way. Like this, there, it was a little uncharacteristic how the Bills got gashed defensively, because I just think of how good, you know, a guy like, you know, Douglas has been since coming over last year at the trade deadline. And obviously since Christian Benford has been here, and obviously Taron Johnson too. I mean, Taron Johnson struggled in coverage really all afternoon as well. It was really how they lost and how they got beat defensively that I think maybe leaves people a little bit scratching their head more so than if they just got beaten on the ground.
Sure, just something you didn't expect. And listen, not many teams are going to have the kind of wide receiver duo they faced. It's not an excuse. It's tough. You're going to have to, you know, you're getting beat by two really fantastic players who can do a lot. They are really good in the run, in the passing game and running routes and detail oriented. They can both block. You know, there's just so many different challenges that Kupp and Nacua present, and they're healthy. And obviously Matt Stafford is, you know, probably a future Hall of Famer. So it was a tough day at the office, no doubt. The other thing is they didn't get any turnovers. Generally, this team, they broke their streak. I think it was 15 straight games with no turnovers. So when you don't turn the ball over and you have a game in which you don't give them one less possession to take over on your side, that's going to even, you know, hamper you even more. So you're right. Now listen, they were getting gashed on the ground in some respect early in the game, but when you look at it, guys, they only gave up, what, 3.3 yards a carry, which I was stunned at the end of the game. I'm like, wait a minute, only 3.3 yards a carry. But it just seemed like there were too many of those 7-yard run, 8-yard runs that kind of helped out the Rams, especially early in the game. And you know, they kind of stayed on schedule because of that, because the third down defense is what really killed them. Third downs, 11 for 15 against one of, if not the worst, third down offense coming into
the
game. So yeah, I all encompassing, you're right. I mean, it just was a bad day. It was a bad day overall for the defense. I don't think it's characteristic of who they are. Every once in a while you have a game like that. They had one in Baltimore. The difference in Baltimore was they didn't have Terrell Bernard, Matt Milano, or Taron Johnson. They did in this game. They had all of them. So that's what was most concerning. But it's the NFL, and you know, they have a very big challenge this week, and the challenge is to turn that around.
And the challenge being to turn that around, Sal, is coming off the heels of the defense effectively getting hit in the mouth, and now you're going to have to face another big challenge here with the Detroit Lions, a team that can also run the ball well, and they do have a pair of very good presences on the outside in Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams. So as Nate said, a lot of potential sleepless nights here coming up for Babich and McDermott. But how do you think the Bills are going to be capable of responding here with the Lions sporting such a talented offense and one of the best offensive lines in the league, the defensive line being a big issue here for Buffalo?
I do think that's where it falls a lot of Derek, which is this defensive line has to be better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just weren't that good on Sunday. They were not causing any pressure. And I saw a lot of people say, well, the Bills need to blitz more. They tried some blitzes. They did. They creeped up. They walked up.
And it didn't work.
The Rams handled them pretty well, right? I mean, like, there was a couple of times they had a couple of pressures, and the Rams had great play calls as well and checked out and saw it. The touchdown pass to Nacua is one of them, where at the end of the game, where they saw there was pressure coming, and they threw it out to him on the wide receiver screen, essentially, and, you know, he went for a touchdown. But that's where this has to come from. This has to come from the defensive line, I think, more than anything. You know, they have to be able to be better than they were. And you have to get some pressure with your front four. If you can get some pressure with your front four, you don't have to always get the quarterback on the ground. We know that. But if you can get pressure with your front four, that allows those linebackers and the secondary players to do their job. You know, and obviously we're going to be monitoring injury to Russell Douglas. Mm-hmm. He had a back injury in the game, and then he left. And then he came back in, and then he left again with a knee injury and did not return. So we'll monitor him this week, see where that goes. You know, that could impact, you know, how you might play. Not necessarily scheme-wise. I think, you know, that will be fine. But, you know, that's a guy that has an ability to take the ball away, although he hasn't had one this year and maybe not his best season right now. And there's been a few times where he's been close. But we'll see where that goes, because, you know, you got to get some pressure with your front four, and that can maybe cause a turnover, which can swing a game.
Let me ask you this, Sal, in specifically about the defensive line, but about Ed Oliver, because I know Bobby Babich talked a little bit about Ed. It was either yesterday or Monday. And, you know, struggling, I don't know. He feels hard to pin down right now what is going on, because he's coming off his career best. Now at 9.5 sacks last year. I mean, he's just, the stats aren't there. It doesn't necessarily mean, especially on the defensive line, Sale, which I try to harp to people, box score stats don't always tell the story, especially with a position like interior defensive line. But to me, the eye test and the box score are matching up with Ed. It's hard to really pin down what it could be that he's struggling with, because he's struggling in the run game and he's just not making the impact in the pass game like we're used to seeing from him.
Talking about Ed Oliver, that is, I'm sorry?
Yes, Ed Oliver.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know. And I think last year, a lot of times where he was most effective was when he had Daquan Jones next to him. And then he didn't. You're like, okay, well, he needs him. And he has him this year, right? Mm-hmm. He has him, and you're right about that. I'm not really sure. I'm not sure what the answer is there, but it does feel like he is not playing his best football right now. You know, that's something the Bills need. They need guys like that, very important interior pass defenders. You know, yes, he can be good against the run, but really what Ed Oliver does better, you know, does really well, is he's a penetrator. He's an undersized defensive tackle who you rely on to get in the backfield to penetrate, not only against the pass, but against the run. If you can get a little bit of penetration up the middle, boy, that can really help, you know, obviously, the pass rush on the outside as well. Then it makes a quarterback step right or step left. And again, here we have this week, you know, Jared Goff is not the most mobile quarterback in the world. He'll bootleg out, and that's what's going to concern me as well, guys. Those boots that they had. I mean, there was the boot game was really good for the Rams. The Lions will do that. They're going to do that. And again, Goff isn't necessarily a runner. I shouldn't say he's not the most mobile. He can move around. He's not going to run on you. But they can bootleg. They can get him in space a little bit, throw the ball. And I think that's where, you know, the Bills have to be very aware. But a guy like Ed Oliver, if you can penetrate up the middle, then that will force him to kind of have to move left, move right. And if you can get him to kind of not be super comfortable back there, that would help a lot.
Sale, I'm looking forward again to this game and how you try to slow down this rushing attack, because this Detroit running game really makes everything they do in the passing game much easier. And I don't know, I think a lot about some of the best running teams in the league. And the things that I think of when I think of running teams that run the ball really well, it's because of their offensive line. And this is the best downhill offensive line the Bills are going to face all season. The Rams, not really in that same category. Do you expect, like, how do you go from playing a middle of the road offensive line to the best and expect them to take that step forward?
Well, I don't know. It's a good question. You just have to play better. I mean, it's really simple as that. I mean, a lot of this just comes down to you got to play better than you did. You got to win your one-on-one battles, right? I mean, how do you go from a team, you know, you go against sometimes you have ebbs and flows where a season where you're going against a really terrific running game and you get, or average run game and you're really bad. And then you go against a better run game and you're really good. It's where your focus is. It's how you game plan. You know, I think everybody can be better. I think the coaching staff can be better. I think Bobby Babich can be better on that side of the ball. I think Sean McDermott can be better. I think all the players can be better. I just think it was a bad day all around on that side of the ball for a lot of reasons. So how do you do it? You get back to what your process is, you know, not trying to, you know, overuse that term, but that's what it is. You get back to that. It's worked for you in the past mostly. And, you know, you have to be better on your own. You have to take accountability. This team talks a lot about looking in the mirror and being honest with yourself. And what can you do? And that's what they have to do. They have to look in the mirror, to be honest with themselves. Here, the good news is the season's not over. They had a bad day. And the defense had a bad day. And they lost. And they didn't look good on defense doing it. But the good news is they still have four more games they can play, and then they still have the playoffs. So it's not like it, you know, cost them their season. We've seen this before throughout the season. Again, we saw it in Baltimore. We've seen it in years past in certain games. But they bounced back in a big way. Last year in Philadelphia, this happened.
Yep.
And then what did they do? They reeled off a bunch of wins in a row. So I guess it reminds me of the commercial, past performances aren't indicative of future, you know, outcomes, right? And that's what you have to hope for. Although this is a really tough challenge, and it wouldn't surprise me if all of a sudden we're looking at the scoreboard with, you know, 3-4 minutes left, and here they are, both teams at 30 points, and it's going to come down to a possession or two, and you're like, what happened to the defense? Well, they played the Detroit Lions, and that's going to be tough. But you have to be able to get back in the lab, figure out what you did wrong, and go back on the field and improve those things. That's as simple as that.
And Sal, they scored 42 points in offense. So before we talk a little bit about the offense, let's get a quick Barnes Firm injury report update. And it's brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. And you mentioned, you know, Rasul Douglas banged up with a couple of different injuries. What else do you have in the injury report for this upcoming game?
Well, I think the one that we're going to be watching mostly is the two, I should say, Dalton Kincaid and Keon Coleman. Once again, neither of those guys played in this game. So today we'll hear from Sean McDermott, 11:45 a.m. We'll hear from Sean McDermott today from down at One Bills Drive. The team will hold a walkthrough practice today, and then we'll hear from players afterwards in the media in the field house and locker room. But he'll give us an update where those guys stand. Now, remember, they both practiced last week. So even if they practice this week, obviously, there's no, you know, guarantee they're going to play. Maybe you get an opportunity from McDermott to say he feels good about them playing this week. My guess is he'll say we'll see where it goes. That's basically what he does on a Wednesday with a lot of these guys. And then there's also things that pop up during the week. You know, Taylor Rapp last week was wearing a red jersey. He was limited. I think there was a lot of freak out going out, Bills fans. I never got the sense that he was in danger of not playing. And of course he did. He did play. He was off the injury report. Wouldn't be surprised if that's the case again, guys, because he had a shoulder injury in this game, Taylor Rapp. But he wound up finishing the game. So don't be surprised if he's some sort of limited or doesn't even practice today because he's nursing that. And then we'll see where it goes there. The other ones were, look at Casey Tuhill did not return to the game with a knee injury. Now that's significant because they have, you know, this defensive line kind of, you know, roster shuffle that's going on right now. Jordan Phillips was inactive last game because Dwayne Carter came back. So if Casey Tuhill can't play, I know they're different positions, defensive end, defensive tackle, but the way that they move these guys around, I wonder if what that means for that particular position. And we don't, I think we're getting close to maybe, my own guess is just me, I don't know. Maybe when we heard anything about DeJuan Smoot, possibly, you know, returning this season, you know, if that were to happen, it wouldn't surprise me if it's sometime over the next few weeks as they lead into the playoffs.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Sal, when it comes to how this offense has been looking, you know, we might have seen the worst that the Bills defense has looked in the entirety of Sean McDermott's tenure here. But we also saw one of the peaks of the Bills passing attack, but not necessarily the peak of the Bills on offense, because the run game was not getting going at all in that one and not really helping the defense take breathers. That said, even though it might have been one of the peaks of the passing attack, I feel like it could get even better because they are really trying to get Amari Cooper acclimated, evidenced by the 14 targets, and he only had 6 receptions against the Rams, but there were a lot of near misses in there, and they're trying to get him comfortable with Josh Allen.
Yeah, I really like the way that you know, Josh and Amari have seemed to kind of start connecting here, right? It hasn't been perfect, and we know early on there were a couple of those. One of the things about Amari is, you know, he just seems to make some catches when he's covered, right? And he's made a few of those already this year, and part of that is because Josh Allen just throws some incredible footballs to where he has to be or where he needs to be and is, I should say. So I really like, you know, how that connection is starting to develop. And as we just said, you know, they have scored here. They've scored 30 points, at least 30 points in, what, 7 straight games, I think it is, right? Let me just count it here.
It is 7,
yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The Bills have scored 30 points in 7 straight games. For a majority of those games, they have not had Keon Coleman or Dalton Kincaid. And that's obviously, now they get Amari Cooper. They traded from the trade deadline. He plays against, what, Tennessee? So, and then he misses a few games. So, yeah, he even missed a few games. So what's impressive to me is they're doing this with a lot of their guys in and out of the lineup. It's not just some of their bigger names like Dalton Kincaid, like Keon Coleman, but guys coming in and out of the lineup. And they're finding ways to get the ball to people to make plays. Khalil Shakir has obviously been fantastic, especially when it comes to run after the catch. You know, we saw that play last week. And how about a screen to the running back, guys? I mean, that coming into play.
I know, right?
Right, if the Bills can run screens to their running backs and put that in their arsenal, and now teams are like, wait a minute, we got to watch out for that, because they had done nothing like that all year. And then they had 2 successful ones, including that 41-yard touchdown pass to Ty Johnson. Now, I said to Ty Johnson after the game in the locker room, I said, boy, you know, that was great. Where did that come from? And he very nonchalantly is like, yeah, we have it in the playbook all the time, just when we're going to use it. I'm like, well, man, it's taken 14 weeks here for them to use it, right? But good for them if they can get something like that going. So, yeah, I think, I don't know about peak, you know, I mean, you know, those things, you know, where the ceiling is, Derek. I just like the fact that even with people in and out of the lineup, it seems like other people are stepping up. And of course, you have Josh Allen, and they're finding a way to still move the ball through the air.
You know, I'm glad you brought up that screenplay, Sal, the one, the touchdown to Ty Johnson, because I was talking about it earlier this morning about how I've been sort of waiting for the buildup of what the counter to that screenplay to Khalil Shakir was going to be. And I thought it was going to be like the pump and go. And instead of having, you know, like Mac Hollins stock blocking for the screen pass, that he would kind of fake the block and then, you know, pump that that screen pass and hit him on a vertical. That's what I thought the sort of build off of that play would be. I loved the add-on being the screen pass because it's on film now, Sal. And I know you probably noticed this too, is teams started keying on that motion play where Khalil comes from left to right and then he gets that screen pass right away. There have been a couple of games in a row now where defenders' hands were just like an inch or two away from tipping that pass. Now I think it forces defenses, at least now it's in the back of their head, that there is a screen off of that. There's other elements to that play, not just what they're sort of window dressing for. So I really liked it because it looked like the evolution of a look. And anytime you're at week 14 and on, you want to start window dressing plays that look like plays you've run before that have a little bit of a different wrinkle to them.
Yeah, and just so you know, everybody understands what you're talking about a little bit more here, I'm rewatching the play back. And if you go and stop the play early on, Khalil takes his step back. He's looking for the ball. Josh is ready to throw it. It looks like a typical tunnel screen to Khalil Shakir. Two wide receivers, actually one Zach Davidson going out. They're going to block, and everybody comes up to cover that from the Rams defense on the right side of the Bills offense. In the meantime, the offensive line block, and then everybody releases and moves left, including Connor McGovern, who, by the way, had a block that was, I think the Rams wanted a block in the back. It was right down the line. It was very even, but all he has to do now, Ty Johnson, once he catches it, is beat one guy, and that's what he did. I guess two guys, one's being blocked, but it was very well executed, you're right. And that's good play calling, and that's good game planning. And, yeah, you put that on screen. Now, hey, they could fake it this way and go that way, and that just keeps those defenders on their heels just a little bit longer. And it might even help the first part of that, right? If you do it, if you throw it to Khalil, if you have enough guys thinking, wait a minute, it might not come here, that just creates a little bit more time and space for him on those receptions as well.
Yeah, totally agree. It'll be interesting to see if they've got other wrinkles on that play as well, because it's a core concept for them, Sal. It's worked really well too, by the way. And I'm excited for, if nothing else, I mean, there's a lot of things to be excited about with Keon Coleman coming back in the lineup when he's healthy. The other thing is, Keon Coleman, to me, started to show before the injury that he can also be a guy they get involved in the screen game. And I think it also creates a little more time and space and maybe less attention on Khalil Shakir in the screen game, because Keon was really showing before the injury, he is a real threat with the ball in his hands after the catch.
Yeah, for sure. And listen, I guess the question will be, if and when he comes back here, which hopefully is sooner rather than later, you know, how much of that is sustainable and carryover from the last time he played? I mean, guys, he's now missed 1, 2, 3, 4 games, 5 weeks, you know, since he got hurt in that Miami game. And he was really coming on, I agree. But, you know, you take away 5 weeks, 4 games of a rookie player, and, you know, now you got to kind of get back up to speed, get that chemistry going again.
Yep.
You know, it's not like he's been with Josh Allen for years. So, you know, we'll see, you know, how they can do. And look, for all of Detroit, just go back to them a little bit. You know, they have injuries, and they have some injuries on their defensive side. There's going to be opportunity for the Bills to score in this game. This is a very, very, it's a very good defense, talented defense, Detroit. They're dealing with some injuries. They're very aggressive, by the way. There's going to be opportunity, just like against the Rams, there's going to be opportunity here for some plays. And when those plays present themselves, you're going to have to make them. And if Keon Coleman is, you know, available for this game, that's a guy that, you know, I think would have some of those opportunities.
All right, Sal, appreciate you, my friend, and look forward to hearing you the rest of the week as we get ready for this prime time sort of matchups. We appreciate you helping us break it down.
Yeah, national television audience once again. It's going to be CBS out in Detroit this time, like they were in Buffalo for the game a few weeks ago. So it should be fun. 4:25 p.m. game.
Awesome. Thanks, Sal.
You got it.
Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. Timeout on the other side. We'll keep talking Bills and Lions. You give us our thoughts at 803-0550. If you've got some takes on game plans, who you're looking for to step up in this game, we'll also at 9 o'clock talk some more Lions as well. You're listening to Nate and Derek filling in for Jeremy and Joe here on WGR.
Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let me put this in capital letters. If I was in a college program, the college program would be a pipeline to the NFL for the players that had the ability to play in the NFL. It would be a professional program, training, nutrition, scheme, coaching, techniques that would transfer to the NFL. It would be an NFL program at a college level and an education that would get the players ready for their career after football, whether that was the end of their college career or at the end of their pro career.
The voice you hear there, I'm sure you know it, Bill Belichick on the Pat McAfee Show, speaking about the potential, or, you know, what he would potentially do if you were ever take a college job. I think he's going to take
that. If I did do it, here's how why I would do it.
It was quite a sales pitch. By the way, a good sales pitch, like a genuinely good one. I think one that resonates probably with a college program like North Carolina. That's, you know, I know moving on from an old coach in Mac Brown, thank you. Moving on from an older coach like Mac Brown, I think he's 72. Bill Belichick's 73. It's not really like they're getting younger. But you are bringing in a guy that I do think maybe less of the Dion effect in terms of being able to connect with younger players.
Yes.
But North Carolina is a program that's not going to have problems generating NIL money to pay athletes.
Nope.
They're going to look at Bill Belichick and say, we have an opportunity, to, especially defensive players, are going to look at an opportunity to go play for Bill Belichick in college. Know that he's going to give them the best opportunity to go play in the NFL. He talks about the nutrition and the schemes and everything. Like, yeah, it's a, I'm not going to lie. It's a good selling. It's a good pitch. It's a good sales pitch.
And I mean, if I'm every quarterback, it would be not founded in reality, but I'd be like, oh my God, the guy that made Tom Brady a thing. I could be that next guy.
Yeah.
Like delusion and grandeur. Yes. But at the same time, who wouldn't want to take a swing at that?
And I think if you're a program like North Carolina, you're looking for some national relevance, at least in the interim, it would be a story all winter. It'll be a story if he ends up taking the job, which I think I saw a couple of reports that, you know, we would kind of find out here in the next 24 hours that he's essentially told them he'd be willing to accept it here on my conditions. I think there was something like a 400-page playbook about all the things that he would do. He would implement staff, all of that good stuff. I wonder if Alex Guerrero is going to follow him. I'm kidding. Alex Guerrero, by the way, is Tom Brady's personal trainer, who Bill Belichick on multiple occasions banned from the building. Don't think he'll be following him to North Carolina if he does end up taking the job. But yeah, I think it appears to me, Derek, that the NFL has kind of turned the page on Bill Belichick, and I think that's why he's looking at the college.
And it does make me sad in a sense. Yeah. Like, yes, he tormented my entire childhood. Well, A, he wasn't alone, but B, I feel a lot differently about Bill Belichick now because of what he did in his later stage years here and how relatively unsuccessful he was without Tom Brady. And I think that he's kind of, I don't want to say he's become a sympathetic figure for me, but in a sense, he's kind of proof of how a game ultimately does pass by even the best of you as a coach. And Belichick is further proof of that. So, not quite sympathetic figure, but one to point out where I'll be like, yeah, it really does catch up to everyone in the pro game.
Time is
unbeaten.
It's undefeated. Let's get connected with our fans, and it's brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Aaron in Buffalo wants to get depressing, so let's hear it. Aaron, you want to talk about the Sabres? What do you got for us? You're on with Nate and Derek. Good morning.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, man.
I just wanted to talk about, I don't understand why the Sabres have so many undersized players. I count at least 7 or 8 guys that are under 6 foot. I mean, Peyton Krebs, 5'11", Jerry Kalik, 5'11", Zach Benson, 5'11", Connor Clifton. I mean, how do they expect these small players to match up defensively? I mean, the average NHL height for a defenseman is, what, 6'2", 6'3"? It's not even just height, though. It's like overall physical stature. Like, how are you going to play against the Tom Wilsons and the Ovechkins in the league? I mean, the floor of this team is just so low. Mm. I mean, if you look at the Bills, those guys have maulers. I mean, they have basketball players that play football. I mean, Keon Coleman is the perfect example of the guy who can fit in perfectly very quickly. I mean, does anyone think Tage Thompson would be as good as he is now if he was 5'11"? I mean, you know, of course not. I mean, they need to get bigger. They need to at least try to get guys that are tougher to play against.
Aaron, size isn't everything.
Yeah.
Especially in the NHL now becoming a speed and skill-based game.
You'd say that, wouldn't you?
Also,
sorry.
Where has the physicality been a problem in Connor Clifton's game at this terrible 5'11"? He's one of your more physical players, but he's short. What?
Listen.
Come on, man.
I'm going to say this, Derek. First of all, you didn't even you teed me up with size doesn't matter, and I made I made a good fun, and you didn't even really like it. It didn't even register with you.
No, because like this is the thing. Yeah. The Sabres may be underachieving, and it has to do more with the willingness to go into the corners, not the stature. It is internal, not external. Never has been the case. Did Nathan Gerby have a problem getting in the corners and battling with people when he was a whole hearty 5'7"? No.
Zach Benson's not 5'11", by the way.
Zach Benson's got that dog
he's
in
like
him.
5'8".
He's 5'8", 5'9".
Yeah.
Zach Benson is one of the more tenacious players on this team. It is a mindset and a mentality.
Whew, man. This size argument really got Derek tweaked out. He's upset.
Nathaniel, we are professionals. We are professionals.
Man, really struck a nerve here with Derek, man. I'll tell you.
Like, it's this archaic take that you need to have big, bulky guys to win this game. And Nate, shut up. I just saw the smirk.
I'm done.
But
no, I listen.
It's a skill-based game now. Speed matters. How come the bottom six has looked better for Buffalo despite
speed.
The struggles?
They're fast. They play speed. Fast. And they play fast.
Yeah.
It's not just that they're fast. It's that they play fast.
It's not that they're just hitting people. Like, Malenstein is a hitter. But how does he get around and get to doing it? He's fast. There's speed in their bottom six. And when they play fast, they are dangerous. It's a mindset thing,
when
not
they
a
play
stature
fast,
thing.
They are dangerous. That's correct.
Learn ball. Thank you. That is my TED Talk. You may now make the small jokes again, Nate.
No. It's I'm just a little upset that when I made it in the moment, it didn't even register.
Yes, because I'm usually one of the most immature people in the building.
Yeah, right. And I just would assumed you would have, you know, got the plot. Either way, thanks for the call, Aaron. We appreciate it. I don't know. That's not really the hill I'm willing to die on. With the Sabres' problems being that they're not big enough. I mean, Jordan Greenway is a big player. Tage Thompson's a big player.
Owen Power would have been running over everyone by that logic, man.
Right, just because he's big.
Yeah.
I mean, size. That doesn't matter, apparently, to Derek Kramer. But in reality, there is some truth to that. I do agree.
Here I was saying, yeah, you could say it again. And now I'm like, all right, now it's there. Now the child is back.
I really wish, well, I hope Joe's in tomorrow for one reason, is I need to hammer him about Jared Goff.
Okay.
So last year, I think it was maybe... Not this previous draft, the draft before that. So the 2023 draft.
Okay.
Joe and I got into a whole like segment long argument about Jared Goff, about how he thought I was crazy to think that Jared Goff was going to A, get the contract extension, B, that was going to do anything, like was going to actually be able to, he wouldn't be the anchor that held them back.
Right.
And I have yet to really get on him about it.
And now it's relevant because they face him.
It's what's relevant is that all of a sudden he's sick this week that we can play Jared Goff. So no, there's definitely
you have a bone to pick with him, and you wanted to all week, and instead I've been sitting here.
Would you
You're
say
looking at this dumb face?
I'll say this about Jared Goff and what he's had over the course of his career. He's had the best play calling head coach in the league in Sean McVay early in his career when he was really making a name for himself. Obviously got to a Super Bowl. They lost. I know. People want to blame him for that Super Bowl loss. The Rams wanted to blame him for the Super Bowl loss. That's why they traded him.
That's why they traded him, yeah. They were vindicated.
They get, now he's with Ben Johnson. And listen, I think if someone like Joe or someone that says, listen, you know, Goff is very dependent on the environment that surrounds him. I would say that about a lot of quarterbacks, by the way. It's not just Jared Goff. But I think his ceiling's higher than a guy like Kirk Cousins. I think his ceiling's higher, especially as a passer, than guys like that. And I think in years, the last couple of years, not a lot of people would have looked at Jared Goff and Kirk Cousins side by side and taken Jared Goff.
Correct.
Now, obviously, it's easy to say that because it looks like Kirk Cousins is starting to fall off a cliff. And again, coming back from an Achilles injury, there might be still something there for Kirk. I think he's 36 years old. By the way, they're not going to be able to get out of that contract next year. It's a very good chance they're going to be paying like $55 million to a 37-year-old quarterback to be on the bench.
Yeah. I don't understand why they went with both that they did. There was no sense of direction with what Atlanta did. As for Goff and the environment thing, like you said, it is true of a lot of quarterbacks. We can even look at a division rival for this. Tua. Under Brian Flores, he constantly got put back on the bench. Ryan Fitzpatrick would rotate in. And when they got Mike McDaniel, he has looked like a better player. And to the point where he gets hurt this season, and Miami's season derails. Not that they've been particularly impressive when Tua's been in the lineup, but typically it has more to do with Miami's defense than their offense. Chris Greer can't build a defense and yet won a power struggle against Flores. But environment does matter for a lot of players. Tell me that Patrick Mahomes would be Patrick Mahomes without Andy Reid. Tell me that Josh Allen wouldn't be Josh, or would be the same Josh Allen in, like, with the New York Jets. No. The Bills have a proper structure here, and Josh Allen is allowed to thrive and develop properly. Bryce Young in Carolina. You look at how often the Panthers messed things up so far. One of the biggest screw-ups was having too many cooks in the kitchen on the offensive side of the coaching staff for Bryce Young when he first comes in. Now, you get rid of a lot of those people. You rework the entire coaching staff. Young even gets benched. He's come back into the lineup, and he looks like a legitimate threat again. He looks like the player that was once promised. Environment matters.
Number one pick, by the way, Jared Goff.
Yes.
Number one pick.
And remember, he looked like a disaster with Jeff Fisher.
Yeah, he did.
He looked unusable.
They
get rid of Fisher. McVay comes in, and he suddenly looks like what was promised.
Yeah, they crushed that McVay that McVay hire. Holy cow! 803-0550. Quick update too. I saw this from Penn State football. They posted yesterday. Former Buffalo Bill Paul Posluszny was officially inducted to the College Football Hall of Fame last night. So congrats to former Bill Paul Posluszny on that Hall of Fame induction. Timeout. Other side, we will prepare for the 9 o'clock hour. We've got Nolan Bianchi of the Detroit News to get the Detroit side of things. So we'll have that 9 o'clock hour after a quick timeout. We'll reset and get that for you at 9 o'clock. This is Nate Geary. That's Derek Kramer. We're filling in for Jeremy and Joe today. This is WGR.
Hey, just so you know, stop by Northtown Kia, 3900 Sheridan Drive in Amherst on December 13th. That's this Friday for the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, live from 10 to noon with Sal Capaccio. Take advantage of 0% on select 2024 models all month. While Sal is there, you can also enjoy some Paula's Donuts and official Bills and Northtown merchandise giveaways, all courtesy of Northtown Automotive this Friday, December 13th. I got some good nonsense for you here. You've got some good nonsense for me here to end the 8 o'clock hour here. You showed me a graphic between Cam Rising and Trevor Lawrence.
Crazy.
So I'll let you go ahead and share that one. But
Cam Rising and Trevor Lawrence graduated high school in 2017, started their freshman year of college in 2018. Trevor Lawrence has been playing in the NFL now for 4 seasons. Cam Rising is eligible for another year in Utah next year. It'll be Trevor Lawrence's 5th NFL season next year.
That's wild.
And he's been playing college football since 2018, since the Obama administration. I'm not sure if that's true. Actually, yeah, yeah.
Jeez, that's wild. Like, because how is he eligible? Another? Hang on.
Wait, no, not the Obama administration. The Obama administration.
Damn, nope. I wish that'd have been cool.
Meanwhile, the reference pages like Pro Football Reference, Pro Hockey, like Hockey Reference, all of them have had the most viewed player pages of 2024. And for hockey, there are 6 states out of 50 that the most viewed player is not Wayne Gretzky.
Say it again.
So out of all 50 states, there are 6 who the most viewed person was not Wayne Gretzky. So just like in every other record book, Gretzky dominates this. But there are 3 players that have a state where they are the most viewed.
Connor McDavid?
No.
Mark Messier?
No.
I don't know.
It's Ovechkin, Crosby, McKinnon.
McKinnon!
McKinnon in Colorado. But then just to make things even funnier, speaking on Ovechkin, he has one less province in Canada where he's the most viewed player than he does state in U.S. He was most viewed in 4 states on Hockey Reference. He was most viewed in Canada in 3 provinces. But that's 3 on a nice little deadlock here. Gretzky dominated the U.S., and yet he does not in Canada. He's not in any province. That's where McDavid's in.
You know what they say. Hockey's not that big in Canada.
McDavid
they haven't won a cup since 93, so.
Yeah. That's true. McDavid in 3 provinces, all in the western of Canada. And then Ovechkin and Matthews, it's like every other province heading east, which is just silly to me.
All right, well, first of all, 2 things. We've got Nolan Bianchi coming up next to the Detroit News, so we'll talk some Lions coming up here next. And then I also have a response from Indiana coach Kurt Cignetti.
Yes,
on Indiana, I mentioned yesterday during Extendo, we'll bring this up in Extendo today, yesterday that Marcus Freeman, head coach of Notre Dame, said that he had to Google Kurt Cignetti, the Indiana head coach, coming into this game to find out a little bit more about him. Well, Kurt's got a response, and we'll get that to you, Extendo Sports. But coming up next, Nolan Bianchi of the Detroit News on the Western Hotline. Stay tuned here on WGR.